Welcome to Lack of Focus, an X-Wing miniatures game podcast brought to you by Dice 8 Productions. Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to another episode of Lack of Focus, episode 47, The Final Countdown. I am your host, Ed Horn, and alongside me tonight, we have a full cast and crew broadcasting from our underground bunker in fear of viruses from unknown lands. So we're going to start off with my good friend, Chad. Chad Brown, how's it going, my friend?
Hey, everybody.
I literally haven't seen you in like 2 months, so, and that's completely my fault, but I'll get to that later.
It is.
One Mr. Sean Dorsey also joining us. Sean, how's it going, my friend?
All right, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm still alive. That's a good start. And yeah, of course.
You know, one thing you got to remember is just pad yourself in a bunch of toilet paper.
You would be surprised. That is completely sold out on Amazon and Walmart.com right now. And we went and got a whole bunch like on Monday and Tuesday. There are actual fist fights breaking out in this area over it.
Oh, dear.
I'm our producer extraordinaire, one Mr. Chris Sheriff. Chris, how's it going?
Good, thanks, Ed.
You had an entire province shut down today for schools.
Yep.
This is just getting a little crazy, but we're not going to get into that. We'll go into that a little bit further. So we have a full cast and crew tonight, and Chris has prepared for us an interesting topic on swarms versus aces, so that should be fun. We have a couple of games to talk about that we can actually get into. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to apologize for the brevity at the moment, but I'm in the middle of doing my SQL Server updates, and I'm trying to squeeze a show in while I'm waiting and watching bars grow from 98% to 97 to 98%. So I haven't talked to Chad in a long time, so I'm going to let him lead in. Chad, what have you been doing lately, my friend? Like, literally, this is us. We didn't even have a pre-show. This is just us, like, jumping right in.
Yeah, I know. I really haven't been doing anything outside of working and sleeping recently. I know last time I was on the show, somebody told me they were going to get some games in with me so that I could have stuff to talk about during the flight deck. Then he never did that.
Yeah, I apologize for that. That was totally my fault.
Yeah, that was your fault, huh?
It is. But before the show closes, I'm going to find out your next off day. We're going to try to get some games in because I've got a cool list. I keep wanting to try on the table.
Ah, okay. You want to see it get destroyed is what you're saying.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Plus, I haven't seen you in forever. That's always a good thing.
What, not seeing me, or?
No. I haven't seen you, so it will be a good thing to see you. And that's you made an effort. You even texted me and said, yeah, Logan and I want to come over. And I'm like, yep. And then I've got this and that going on a Sunday. And then the Monday followed up, and I've got kids. And yeah, I completely accept full blame for that.
Yeah, you should.
I do. All right, yeah, Sean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, hopefully we can figure out something to, you know, get some games in or just visit or something.
Yeah, just hang out and BS. That'll be a ton of fun.
That would be nice.
All right, Sean, what have you been doing lately? About the same?
Yeah, pretty much not a lot other than working and trying to get my garden starts going. So not a lot of time. My son's been busy, so we haven't had a chance. Our goal is to get at least two games in, maybe three games in a month to try to get me back into playing the game and then having a really, you know, getting to a point where my back can handle all that. But we'll see. It's right now, it's just that time of year where I need to get my garden going. So,
well, with any luck, they're going to shut down the entire country for 3 weeks and then you'll have oodles of time to get your garden going.
Yeah, I got not a notification, but they started asking questions if we're able to work from home and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, yeah, I guess so. You know, I don't have a problem working from home. You can pay me to sit in my chair in my, you know, in my bed clothes all day. I'm good with that.
Yeah, I'll chill out in my underwear and code all day. I'm good with that. That's the upside for doing a developer. I can do that anywhere.
Exactly.
All right, well, then I'll kick it off. I actually have something to talk about for those of you that didn't hop over to the Patreon and check it out on YouTube. But Chris and I actually played a real-life game of X-Wing. And you need to check the temperatures in hell. I may have caused a worldwide pandemic, but I actually won a game of X-Wing.
Yeah, sorry, folks. Sorry.
So if I can potentially take small blame for that, the next thing's going to be Locust, and then I'll know it's my fault.
Yeah, I'm calling bullshit on that.
it's recorded, man. It's there. He has video proof.
I do. I absolutely do. It came down to the wire. It came down to the last turn. But Chris and I did play a game on Vassal for those of you that got to watch it on YouTube. But I ran the 4B and Jake list. I flew it poorly. I had some very
lamented his dice all the way through the game.
All right. Admittedly, I had two kill boxes set up to kill Fen and Rom. And I rolled 14 dice on Rom and landed three paint in 14 dice. And then had Fen in a kill box and still didn't manage to kill him. But ultimately, in the end, I think it was Jake that pulled it out in the end with a long shot to take out Fen and actually squeeze me out a win.
It was good. Good game.
Yeah, no, I completely flew it incorrectly. And the more I've thought about it, like, I really want to, like, try the list again, like, kind of getting an idea of how Jake really should be weaving in and out of those B-Wings and passing those tokens along, especially after I learned the I can boost and pass a focus and then barrel roll and then pass a focus. I'm like, why wasn't I doing that most of the game?
Yeah.
But Chad, you may not
know. All the way around, but yeah.
Yeah. Chad, you may not know this, but they've added some interesting terrain rules, quote unquote, so to speak. They added a whole bunch of new rules for obstacles, and we were playing, what was the name of them we were playing, Chris?
Fresh debris, fresh wreckage, something like that.
Where there's basically just like nine things of obstacles on the course. Yeah, so it
was six debris clouds, and then you have three gas clouds, which have to be exploding out of one of the debris. So, yeah.
It was really cool. It was really neat because I feel like it definitely added a new piece to the game, some new strategies. I think it definitely affected how we flew in that one corner for specifically, because it became like it really determined new flight paths. It was just really neat to play something different in X-Wing. So I was a huge fan of it. So I had a ton of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm pretty good at flying around stuff. So I mean, that does sound a little bit interesting to see extra, like, you know, obstacles on the table. So.
Well, and what we did, the way that we made one of the obstacles, because the way that it works is you put the gas clouds attached to debris field. So there's no rule stating that you can only put one gas cloud on one debris field. So we had like this one really long one in the lower left corner that was basically three obstacles in one, which really cut off traffic going down to that corner. So if you were going to go down in there, like, you really needed to be careful because there was a lot of things you had to fly through.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, if you guys do get to play, I recommend playing something like Asteroid Shower, something really good, really changes it up, just so you can see the opposite end of the spectrum. Because that was the impact of playing that, which is effectively, it's just three extra obstacles which don't have the same placement rules.
Right.
So it's one of the minimal changes. But.
Because, all right, so in theory, Chad, how it works, though, so like I could corner the debris field and then add a gas cloud to it that goes outside of the normal deployment zone. Yeah, it was really neat.
That sounds like something I'd like to try some.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, we can give that a shot. I'll bring the rules over, and then the game that we play with some of the new obstacle rules.
Yeah, you have to come over first, or at least go to the game store so I can play you.
I will have to do that. All right, Chris, how about you? You've probably played more than the rest of us combined. So what have you had going on lately?
Well, I went to our local game night and didn't get a game because everyone was playing. And then the way the time slots worked out, I was just the odd person out. And so the only game I played was the game against you.
Oh, woohoo. So for once, I'm actually tied for first for the amount of games actually played on the show. Woo!
Yeah, I had opportunities and then they kind of slipped through my fingers, you know.
I understand completely.
Tarkin crossing his fist. And, it was good. I had one of my group chats with some of the locals. One of the guys was sharing his Alphabet Squadron list. And I may have commented to him that, you know, it's fine if you want to take that to the casual game night. I'm sure you'll get some wins. But then again, you could probably click random on Squad Builder and get some wins. So now we're like, probably going to be doing a random squad on one of the evenings. So
I've always wanted to do a tournament like that. Like, it'd be so hard to set up because you have to have every ship and every faction and every upgrade card to do it, but it would be so much fun.
Yeah, well, I might get the listeners to pick the faction, and then I will record the 10-second snippet on Facebook or whatever of me like randomly generating the squad so people know that I don't cheat. And we'll go from there.
All right, so that's going to do it for games played. We have a main topic. So, Chris, I'm going to let you introduce this one because, again, we are trying to make this, unfortunately, a brief show. But depending on how much longer we got, I've got a side topic that we might save. And that might just be an in focus for later, but we'll see how it goes. So, Chris, I'll yield the floor to you, sir.
Yeah, so it's kind of on vogue at the minute. I mean, I was on the crates the other week and they were, Travis was talking about swarms and that kind of thing. Then I did a recording with Bruno and I was asking him about what he thinks is a swarm. Like, where's the tipping point? Like, is five X-Wings a swarm? You know, six TIE fighters is a swarm, but five X-Wings isn't. You know, how do people feel about it? Where's the line? And but what I wanted to delve into the crux of why people are talking about swarms and that, like, the game length and what takes time and all of that kind of thing. So that's kind of where we're going to sit. It's nothing set in stone. It's not going to be like a really in-depth minutia topic. We're going to be pretty high level and a lot of it's going to be anecdotal, but that's where we're what we're going to talk about.
All right, well, let's start off with kind of defining some terms then. So in my opinion, and again, I'm hoping to hear everyone else's on this one, I would think that the average X-Wing list ranges between 2 and 4 ships. So you have more elite builds that are like, especially used to be back in the day, large base ships, but having 2 ships is kind of like obviously the minimum of the game, but anywhere between 2 and 4 is your average list. And 4 was really kind of pushing. We saw a lot of 3 ship builds. Once you get into like the 5 and 6 ships, I think that definitely does start falling into the category of swarm. Most people, when they're thinking of swarms, though, I think of multiples of the same ship, like a whole bunch of generics, maybe a couple of named pilots, all of them the same way, like the classic TIE swarm with, you know, HAL Runner and 7 TIE fighters. I don't know if he can still run that anymore with the way how many points she went back up. But in general, I would think that any list that goes over 5, and they don't all have to be identical, would kind of start classifying into the light swarm.
Yeah, I think that's a general consensus that I've kind of got from people. It's like, if it's the same chassis and there's 6 of them, it's a swarm. I think there's obviously outliers to that, like the Torquil Mux swarm. Was still like 5 or 6 ships, but I think that would still count. Another big thing that I think of is the damage output. So you're kind of looking at the 2 attack dice ships and having multiples of them is pretty relevant to it being classed as a swarm or not.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the strategies for that, of course, is because you're using so many attacks that your first couple of ones are not even trying to do damage, it's trying to strip tokens off so that the guys in the back towards the end are the ones that are actually pushing through the damage.
Yeah.
All right. So I think we have some terms set for that one.
Yeah. So what I wanted to I'm going to start off, going to ask some questions, get some feedback from the peanut gallery, you know.
a full peanut gallery tonight.
Yeah. So people have been complaining about turn count in second edition and how long it takes and how unresolved games can feel, that kind of thing. And I think personally, I think there's a lot more issues than ship count. But it's an easy one for people to point at, so they often do. You know, people are playing swarms, so a game takes longer because the swarm slows the game down. So where do you guys sit on that kind of thing? Do you expect, if you sit down and there's a swarm opposite you on a table, you're looking at 8 vultures or whatever, you know, playing against some Separatists, are you expecting the game to take longer?
I'll let the other guys take first turn on this one.
I'll be honest, I don't expect it to take longer. I just expect it to be a very compact game, so you're reducing turns, and it kind of forces the other player, in my opinion, it would force the other player to maximize everything that they do rather than kind of playing a little looser. You would actually have to play a much tighter game and try to make everything go perfectly. You know, but there are swarm players that are quick at moving, quick at revealing, quick at moving stuff. So it all depends. I think, though, that it can make the game seem a lot less than a game with, you know, 2 ship builds on the table.
Yeah.
Chad, your thoughts?
Whenever I'd play against, a swarm or anything, I mean, if it's, say, for example, all generics and everything, I don't look at it as, oh, this is going to take longer, because I like to fly aces a lot. And basically, I would just sit there and be like, okay, so let's see. If I got 3 aces on the table, I'm going to try and take out 3 of those, you know, other ships. Because usually when you're flying large number swarms, they're not big on health. So I just kind of look at it as, all right, well, let's try and at least eliminate 2 to 3, you know, ships each turn. Get this over as quickly as possible, because you know they're going to soak up the damage. They're not usually very heavy on the green dice either when it comes to certain swarms. So I mean, I don't necessarily look at it as it's going to take longer. Now, if there's like a couple named guys and like 3 to 4 other ships of the same type and all that, then maybe it might take a little bit longer, but I don't normally sit there and dread seeing a swarm.
No, I tend to agree with that statement. Like, for me specifically, I really feel like it's the player. Like, I have played against, and I used to fancy myself a swarm player that can lay down dials, knows exactly how the ships are going to fly, puts them all down and says, okay, all of my ships are doing this maneuver. They're all doing this action. Is that okay? Because you have to ask these questions now. Moves all the ships quickly. It moves up. But I've also played people that are running 2-ship builds that hem-haw around, twist the dial around. So like I don't know that necessarily the number of ships on the table determines how fast a game is going to go. I think that is genuinely player-based. Is now, don't get me wrong, there are instances, for example, when you get into that third round and dice start flying and ships start bumping, that it becomes a bit more complicated, where you've got to make sure that this particular ship makes it all the way through the turn right where it's bumping, and then that one bumps, and you have to go through that whole, you know, setting up the railroad tracks with all the maneuver templates to get everyone down into where they're supposed to be landing. Does that cause a little bit of a problem? Sure, I would agree with that. That is probably a fair counterpoint to it. But in general, especially if you're flying in open fields, it should just genuinely be the player. How fast can you pick your ship up and move? Pick your ship up and move, especially in timed events.
I think some for me to add is when either I've rarely played a swarm, but I have played swarms before on the Rebel side. To me, if I'm playing against a swarm, the game almost feels more cumbersome against swarms or with swarms on the table, just because there's just so much going on and so much you have to register. But other than that, to me, I mean, I think swarms are okay. You know, they've been in the game since day one. But I think it does change how games are played to a lot of degree, especially in 2.0 now.
So I'm actually really proud of you all. I really considered and no knee-jerk reactions there. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I tend to temper myself a little.
Yeah, it's almost like I've trapped you all for like too many shows now. You're all learning curses. A couple of the main talking points you brought up there is obviously slow players. Slow players are slow no matter what they're playing. Like, you could give them, well, I'm trying to think of a terrible ship that only has like the focus action now, and it's still umming out whether to focus or not. And, you know, really, really just take the time being considered players. We'll not call them slow, we'll call them a considered player. But I'm going to just give you some anecdotal. I went to Gold Squadron podcast, just straight out there onto a YouTube channel, and I grabbed a game which was 2 ships. It was a Fenbubba against 6 strikers. And I thought this was going to be a really good one because the strikers have got pre-dial movement, the dial that they all need to set, and they then get an action of which it could be a barrel roll. So there's lots of positional thinking, and there's going to be 6 of them on the table. So I thought that was about as extreme as I could get it on one end compared to like Fenbubba, both of them moving last. Bubba's got Slave 1 title, so he can literally change his dial to either other side if it's not ideal. And obviously, Fen can either boost or barrel roll. So they've got lots of post movement or like perfect information choices. So would you expect like the dial setting to be what takes the time, or the actual like physical movement of it?
Again, I think that's situational. Because again, when you've got each additional ship that you're trying to move, especially if swarms are flying in formation, you need to consider not only where the first ship's going to land, but where the last ship's going to land and everything in between. So there's a lot to consider there. So if I go here and I bump, how do I want to get past that? Where is that going to land? It definitely adds more variables to the equation when trying to think it out. So I'm not going to disagree that having multiple ships with multiple, even if all of them had the exact same dial and they were relatively simple, low maintenance dials, like they don't have a lot of super fancy maneuvers, I think that's still a factor though. Like even though they have the same dial and it's relatively simple, you still need to kind of consider where everything's going to land.
So I think we can both agree. Well, I would hope we can all agree maybe that turn one should probably be the fastest turn for all parties involved.
Oh yeah. Like especially if So I assume we're going in from a tournament's perspective, but I guess I'm trying not to keep myself focused in that particular direction. At any point in time, whenever you're laying your ships down, you should already be planning your flight path.
Yeah.
You should already say, I want to kind of squeeze around that rock in between over the hair, and maybe if he brings his ace down in this direction, I'm going to set up this one kill shot over there. Your first three or four moves should almost be pretty much planned out. It's once, the best laid plans don't survive contact with the enemy. It's once the dice start rolling, once ships start blowing up, once ships start bumping, that's when the mess comes in.
Yeah. So I turn one of this, the game that I watched, the six strikers take 2 minutes to do all six moves, of which there's ailerons for each one of them, the actual performing the move and then taking an action.
Oh, wow. So
2 minutes seems like pretty quick to me there. So
yeah, even
given my, I wouldn't feel bad if I was playing against six strikers, because that seems like something fun that I wouldn't mind seeing on the table, to be honest, you know? And if you give them 3 minutes, even 4 minutes, I don't feel bad at that. Like 30 seconds a ship seems okay. You know, when you're talking numbers, that feels okay. So we're going to say that's a really, really quick turn. You know, this is a practiced opening that it knows exactly where all the ships were going to go. So 2 minutes might be on the really quick side for that. How long do you think it takes for the Fenbubba player to do their moves?
A minute? Maybe? I mean, don't get me wrong, you've got a whole bunch of, like, you know, boost and barrel rolls that you can pull off with Fen, but you should kind of be, all right.
It's 90 seconds.
Yeah, see, I would agree with that.
2 minutes to take to move six ships that have two maneuvers per move and then an action, compared to two ships, takes 90 seconds. So, if we're okay with a two-ship player taking 90 seconds to move two ships, I feel like you can only multiply that. So if they had six, is 4 minutes 30 seconds okay for a movement phase?
Barring complications like bumping obstacles.
Remember, we're only talking about turn one, opening move.
If we're talking about turn one, then yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So I think if the six-ship player takes nearly 5 minutes to do their opening moves, that's taking the piss a little bit.
Yeah.
I would agree with that statement.
But it's okay for a two-ship player to take 90 seconds, because we all agreed that that was okay.
Well, I think that it runs down to, once again, player. But if you're taking player out of it and you're just looking at this from movement, if you don't know what you're doing in the first turn, you know, you may want to rethink your plane of your game. But,
yeah,
you know, to me, 60 seconds probably is my limit, you know, as far as looking at that. Just 30 seconds a ship, revealing dial, putting down the template, moving the ship, and then figuring out maybe your opponent did something a little different than you thought. So you might change your mind on action, although there shouldn't be much in the way of action choice on the first turn unless something crazy happened or some strange start position. But
yeah,
I think 90 seconds is way too generous as far as allowing a player to take that long with two ships.
Yeah, and that's kind of it. You know, you expect certain actions to take a given amount of time, but obviously it's quantifiable by the external pressures upon those actions. Like moving the ships turn one might be really quick for a swarm player, because this is my deployment, this is how they all move. What you do is irrelevant. Whereas in the ace player, setting the dials might be really easy, but then because they move last, I now get to look at the different board state, and I've got to now assess this board state with regards to what I've dialed in, and now I have a new set of decision points. Like, does Bubba actually want to turn the way that I dialed in? So that eats up time. Once he does that move, does he want to actually do a boost to change his position slightly? Or do I just take, you know, any old action? Fenrir is the same. Can I kind of pull range with a barrel roll to try and give me a better approach? Do I need to, do I risk getting shot and then put linked action for the focus so that I have it, but then I'm stressed, which limits my dial next turn? So I'm using turn one time to plan my turn two, whereas in the swarm player doesn't get the benefit of using turn one time to plan turn two, because he's got to wait and see where your ships finish.
Yeah, but
does that make sense?
Yeah, but doesn't that come down to list choice then? If you're gonna play, you know, a low initiative swarm, you're at a disadvantage in the decision making until your opponent does what the opponent's gonna do, because you don't have any information or very little information prior to. So you really do have to wait.
Yeah, I suppose the point I'm kind of leading towards on this little segment of it is that, like, if a swarm player, like, especially turn one's irrelevant, turn two's irrelevant. That turn where the swarm player breaks the swarm, if they're taking, you know, the full 30 seconds per dial to set a dial, and the ace player's, you know, had both dials down in 15 seconds, that's because the ace player actually used all of the time in the activation phase of a previous turn to plan their moves.
Right, that makes sense. Planning ahead.
Yeah, so the swarm player can't plan ahead yet.
Yeah, that's kind of the point that I was going to drive home at, is like, how a lot of that is knowing what you want to. Don't get, again, I'm always going to go back to the, it's entirely possible that someone blocked out a maneuver that you weren't thinking of, but for the most part, you should already know when you're setting that dial what your plan is. Now, are there instances, for example, where you make that, you finally get the ship to the end of the template, like, ooh, I thought I could make a barrel roll here, but it doesn't look like I have to, and then you have to kind of rethink the plan or reformulate the plan? Sure, absolutely. That absolutely happens. But for the most part, you should kind of already know what you wanted to do before you even pick up the ship.
Yeah. And I generally, when I fly in Aces anyway, I look at the areas that my enemy ships are going to be occupying and where those arcs are going to be pointed. And when I dialed in my move, it's, okay, if the arcs are this way, this is how I react to it. If they're here, this is what I do. If Ed's done a K-turn here and I bump him, well, I suppose get fucked fan, it's unfortunate. But you know what I mean? It's I have all the benefits as the ace player to be able to take my time and then still complain about the swarm player slow playing, placing the dials.
Yeah,
yes, I would agree.
Yeah. So I think part of it would be like, we need to make sure we're taking the emphasis off individual like dial placements, moving ships. I suppose moving ships is fine. Like the physical act of performing your maneuver should take a fixed amount of time with variables in there for the compactness of the current play state. Like if I've got to mark three ships to move this one ship, that's going to take extra time. But it doesn't matter what the initiative of a ship is. Picking it up and moving it to the other end of a template shouldn't take, you know, 15 seconds, 30 seconds, whatever. Whatever your arbitrary number is, that's fine. So if someone's taking 2 minutes to move each ship, I think there's a problem. And that's regardless of, you know, what their initiative value is, how many of them are on the table. But I think swarm players should get a little bit more slack in the dial placement or in the planning phase, whereas in ace players end up getting more slack in the activation. And even when it comes to like target selection, when you're shooting first, you get to pick without perfect knowledge because you don't know what the dice are going to be. So you're like, well, do I shoot here? Am I going to spend my token? Because if I don't kill it, I get shot back X number of times. So I might need that token. And obviously the easy option is, oh, you never spend a token if you're going to get shot back, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, they're all decision points. And that's where it swings in the other direction. Having the higher initiative gives you more decision points. If you're shooting everyone at initiative one, yeah, you get to choose which ship's going to shoot, but you kind of, it doesn't matter. You know, you always spend your token because everything else is shot.
Yeah, no, I would think that's fair.
So, yeah, I mean, I've got more figures, but like, I can go through it. I've wrote down instances of like three turns worth of play.
Yeah, you've gone through all the work. Let's kind of dig through it.
Yeah, but what I wanted to obviously stress is all of this is anecdotal and all of that kind of thing, but so, for example, there's going to be the turn that the strikers actually split formation here. That one takes... So he takes an extra 30 seconds on top of the ace player to plan his dials, the turn that the swarm splits. So the ace player takes about...
How many ships, though?
Still six.
Yeah, so I'm kind of right with that.
This is turn three. Takes the ace player about a minute to set his dials. And then it takes a swarm player about 90 seconds to set his.
That's fine.
Yeah. And that feels fine on both regards. You know, I don't feel bad about anything. But given that this is a turn the swarm splits, it takes 90 seconds for him to move all six ships. The ace player takes like 65 seconds.
Now, wait a second. So you're telling me that the swarm player, if you went down to like a per ship amount of time divided about how much time it took to pull that off, the swarm player is moving faster.
Yeah.
And the swarm player is flying strikers, which means they've got that pre-move before their move.
Yep.
Which he would have already had to have thought about before he started.
Yeah, so
that was involved in the planning.
Yeah, so he takes 30 seconds more because he's considering his aileron move and then his maneuver. And this is the turn the swarm breaks up. Hmm. And it only takes him 30 seconds longer here. The ace player, remember, is only flying two ships. So in their mind, they have the luxury of time. Whereas in the swarm player, yeah, always feels pressured that I'm playing the swarm. It can't be my fault if we only play like 10 turns. That's what I'm kind of, you know, hinting towards, that where you allocate this time in a right. And like the game actually goes on to be a 200 to whatever to the ace player. Bubba Fenn kind of rips through the swarm. Once a couple of them go down, it drops quicker. So the game doesn't even go to time.
So here's a question. So, and I understand what you're getting at, but I'm going to throw a curveball into this a little bit. So
I hope so.
If you're a swarm player, don't you want to try to limit turns? Because you know you're up against an ace. You know that you're at a disadvantage when it comes to attacking because you may lose a ship. So you're down firepower and swarms are about concentration and so on and so forth. Wouldn't viewing the game the other way as the swarm player say, I only want this game to be 10 turns. I only want this game to be 8 turns. Because the chances of it, if the game extends longer, I'm going to lose just because I'm at a disadvantage due to firepower. And I do have to get lucky on some rolls to be able to take an ace off. You know, we saw that a lot in 1.0, where some aces were very difficult to beat. In this regard, as a swarm player, I would think you would want to think the opposite rather than worry about what the other player thinks about or the community thinks about how many turns you should have. But it should be about a limiting factor, just because the limiting factor puts it in your advantage. If you can go to time, and in the world of half damage on ships, fewer turns means there's less opportunity to lose ships, but more opportunity to take shields and hull off of your opponent, potentially giving you, you know, a minimal but a points win. I think that that's the way that I would view it. If I were playing a swarm, I think that's how I would view it. I would view it, if it's a 75-minute time limit game, I'm going to take a little bit longer if I can get away with it. Now, I'm not going to take an egregious amount, but I'm going to maximize everything to try to shorten this game as much as possible to put that value into my advantage, rather than what you were saying, Chris, where you're worried about what your opponent or how many turns, you know, trying to maximize total turns in 75 minutes. I really think if I'm a swarm player, I'm going to go the exact opposite and try to limit.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said, because he does bring up a fair point, because when that would be easily one of my strategies going in, like, oh crap, I'm going up against an ace list. All I really need to do is get half points on this one ship. Even if he kills two, maybe even three of my ships, I'm still going to be able to pull out the win. So then the question becomes, is that necessarily... See, I don't know that I necessarily blame that on the list that you're running, but it's a valid strategy. I don't know. First of all, I never endorse slow play, period. Like, if you are genuinely him-hawing around, like, that's a violation. Like, you shouldn't be able to do that. But there are ways to extend the time of a game to get to time that don't involve doing that. You can still get your dials down quick and fast, and I'm going to break out a formation here, and I know it's going to take him two turns to spin around to come and get me, that kind of thing. Like, there are tactics that you can employ that are completely within the rules and completely in sportsmanship and still not necessarily engage and still be able to pull that off. So there is a lot to be said for that.
So the counter to that would be, what happens if you go in as a swarm player planning to swarm play and the ace player opts into your swarm play? So you actually play three turns, of which the final turn is him getting half points on one droid, and the game finishes 11-0.
See, but my point though wasn't about slow playing. It's the image, you know, there's a perception that you're still playing the game quick. You know, you're looking at, instead of the 10-turn game, you're looking at, let's say, an 8-turn game. And where I think you can gain value in this strategy, and I'm not saying this is what you would want to do, but this is probably what you would want to do in some cases, especially in the world of half points, where you're talking about moving ships and actions and everything being completed in X amount of time. Well, first off, who defines what is good time to move a ship? So if you're looking at 15 seconds a ship in a swarm, you know, and you have six ships, let's say, you know, you're looking now at, you know, what, 90 seconds? But let's take that 90 seconds in that phase, and let's move it to 110 seconds. So you're really not slow playing. You're just putting the perception of decision making in there, you know, that you're looking now, not first turn, not second turn probably, but this is when you hit that engagement phase of the game. It's because, and I can speak a lot into 1.0 because that's where most of my experience in this game is, but I remember both playing and watching games where that person who's going to, you know, for a fact he's going to take a focus. You just know it's going to happen. But that determination took 20 to 30 seconds because he's thinking about the barrel roll, thinking about the focus, maybe an evade, but no focus. But focus is the most realistic play at that point. I've seen players do it. I've played against players that do that, you know, where it's not really slow play. You know, what's the definition of slow play compared to decision making? How do you define that portion of this? And
the problem with slow play as an actual violation is that when it's quantified the way it is by FFG, which is seeking to take advantage by manipulating a clock effectively, I'm paraphrasing there, but that means you have to not be doing that. You have to be playing the game at your maximum pace without any reference to what the time is at all.
I get that. I fully get that, Chris. But my point is that how do you define that? What's the point of definition for each player? Because, you know, everybody knows how I build lists. I build lists with the fewest decisions possible to be made, because as the tournament goes on, it just makes the game easier to play. Now, it may not be a good strategy against good players as you're getting, you know, getting that higher level of the cut and things, or getting towards the cut. But at the same time, how can anybody put a rule in there that states anything about, you know, defining what slow play is without saying this is what defines slow play? Like, it's still up to the judge to make that decision, what slow play is. But how do you, you know, how can I determine what slow play is when a player still has the right to make a determination, you know? And you could play that point greatly by, if the ship has three possible actions, you know, what's an extra 20 second on each ship to define what that action is? Because you may need that, you know, especially towards the end of the game where everything becomes crucial, and especially in this type of matchup. Every move, every millimeter, everything matters when it comes to how this game will end. You know, and your decisions have to be made. If you're expected everybody just to make split decisions with everything, I don't know if that's a good idea in this game or in any game, because you're forcing people to just play fast just because some rule says, you know, is a not an ambiguous rule, but a rule that has all this terminology in it forces you to play faster than you really should.
And that's one of the reasons why I've always been an advocate of, and I did it this way when I was describing the timings in that game. You'll notice that I always did them in reference to each other, right? Not in reference to how long an individual took to do one thing. It was, this action took 30 seconds more than this action. So it's within the context of that single game. So personally, like if a game finishes at an event that I'm TOing and it only got five turns, like, that's both players' fault. Both people opted in to the pace at which the game was played.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And it's no good 60 minutes into a game realizing that you're on turn four.
I get all that. Totally, completely get all that. But that's the way that game played out. You know,
and that's, and like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think if both players are playing the game and are enjoying themselves, and like I feel like it is a game, there has to be room for banter. And like, if both players are choosing to spend their 75 minutes chatting and talking and having a lackadaisical game of X-Wing, like the integrity of my event be damned. Both of them are having fun. Neither one of them is complaining about the other one. It's fine. Like, it doesn't matter. They're pushing the toy spaceships around the table and having fun.
Because I've seen interesting situations, even talking in this type of a list versus this type of list. I've seen a game where a player, we'll call it, believes they're behind, whether they are or not, who's fast playing, because they think they're losing or they are losing. And then all of a sudden, there's a turn in the game where, you know, they're now up on points. You know, they've done something, killed a ship, done something where they're up on points. Now they start to slow down. And then
take a little extra turn whenever they're trying to get her out in the air.
And I mean, I've actually played against opponents that are like that, that when they're at the disadvantage, they're trying to speed the game up like crazy. But when they're at the advantage, they're slowing the game down. And that's why I get back to, if you're going to play a swarm, you want to play as even keel across the board the entire game, where you take that extra 10 to 20 seconds for each ship to make that determination. Because if you're doing it at the beginning of the game and you're doing it at the end of the game, your game play never changed. You've set the tone for your play and the game itself, whether it goes 7 turns, 8 turns, 10 turns, 12 turns, you're playing to what the advantage that you have over that list, which is the ability to possibly get fewer turns in, which is to the in my opinion, to the advantage of that swarm player.
So one thing I wanted to kind of steer is, sorry, does anyone else have anything before I kind of move it forwards a little bit?
No, I'm good. Chad, how about you?
I think it's been pretty much covered, yeah.
So what I wanted to move it to was, like, rather than thinking about the game in all of these, like, time it takes to do this, and then like the number of turns you got to play, I kind of feel like the meaningful, like the engagement turns when dice were rolled, are what actually matters in a game of X-Wing. That's what makes you feel like you were playing. So like, if I'm playing, what was the stupid list I was running a while ago? Like 7B regen Anakin and I think it was like 120 point Anakin and a stupidly regen Rick Olay. And I won games with that by just not playing. I would run away, like hide behind obstacles, make sure the gas clouds were always blocking shots, make sure that no matter where they went, it was irrelevant. You got a shield there. Best hope that Rick doesn't do a 5 straight boost and regen this turn and make all of your choices irrelevant. Oh, look at that, he's back above half points. You've still not earned anything. And like, I would fire maybe 3 times in a game, half point something, and then win. And like, we might have played 20 turns, but the number of meaningful turns that we had might have been like 3 or 4.
Yeah, but isn't meaningful turns in the eye of the beholder at that point?
Yeah.
Because for you with that list, every turn except the engagement turns are almost the meaningful turns.
Yeah.
Because you're not allowing yourself to get attacked.
And I feel that's the key, though, that it's actually all of this is based on feelings, which means that it's impossible to be right. There's no single judgment, which is why like FFG shouldn't actually define what swirl playing is. They shouldn't, you know, it should take you this long to move a ship. It should take, you know, if you are running an eight ship swarm, you should allocate this amount of time for planning phase, this amount of time for activation phase, this amount of time for engagement, because...
Oh, God, no, there's so many contributing factors, and you'd have some asshat somewhere with a stopwatch in every game.
No, if you're going to go to that, then you go to chess clocks.
Yeah, that I could see. That I could make an argument for.
See, and that's actually where I think the game should be anyway, is chess clocks, where, you know, second edition is different than first edition in that there's just a lot of things, first edition had a lot going on too.
I think you hit the nail on the head with the half points on all ships, Sean. I mean, that's, in my mind, ultimately what decides the feel of second edition compared to first edition. And you've got the multiplying factors of a lack of token stacking. There's no super races that just don't take damage anymore. Everything has the potential to get damaged and give up half points. So I think you hit the nail on the head with that statement.
Yeah, and I'm a firm believer, and I thought this since 2.0 came out, that the game... Now, stores would have a difficult time with this. You know, they'd have to invest in chess clocks, but the major tournaments and things like that, to me...
You guys don't have phones?
Well, yeah, you could do that too. You know, phones could do it too. I get it.
But man, we're not selling like Diablo Mobile or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's where I was going.
Sorry, Sean.
It's okay. My point about this is that if we're going to worry about time, then we worry about individual player time, and you do it on a chess clock. You know, you put the game 45 minutes each player. That's what you get. I play chess competitively. So I know what the 60-minute clock or the 2-hour clock means when you're playing chess. Because, you know, when you're getting into the end game and you're trying to figure out, you know, 4 steps ahead as far as if I do this, he's going to do this. It's the same thing in X-Wing to me, where you're after engagement one, it becomes, you know, a mid game of chess. And then once you're through that mid game and you're starting down to the end of the game, everything matters. You know, I remember watching Doug Kinney play some games in Omaha, and you could see it's just like a chess match with him where he's looking at the game and trying to figure out exactly everything that he's going to do based upon what his opponent's already done. And it was cool to watch. And his list is built for that type of play. You know, he played Boba Fett a lot early on, and he used the Slave One title so he could make choices. And the game, if we're going to define the game, if we're going to call slow play as anything in this game, the game has half points. So it changes this, you know, like we've already talked about, it changes the way the game plays to begin with. But at the end of the day, then, if we're going to talk about slow play, you have to define it with some method to say each player gets X amount of time in a game. You use it however you want to use it. If you want to sit there and spend 5 minutes setting dials every turn, you're not going to get more than 3 or 4 turns in for yourself, and you're going to run out of time, and your opponent's going to automatically win. You know, I've always hated the slow play rule just because proving slow play is difficult. In the world of half points, it actually matters greatly, you know, how you play the game. It matters more. Now, like I said, if I were to play a swarm, I'm going to find a way to get, I'm not going to call it slow play because it's not really slow playing. I'm just going to extend my time on decisions. So, and then
the thing I always tell people when I'm trying to teach people in Calgary and I give advice, Sean, and I don't know if this will kind of clarify your thoughts somewhat, but it's being cognizant of the game state in reference to the time all the way through the game and understanding your win conditions within that.
Well, so that, I think that gets down to an even bigger question, if you want my honest opinion. So is using the clock as an advantage in any sense of it fair gameplay? So, for example, you could take a situation that's completely outside of the situation where it's the swarms versus aces, where you have two pilots, there are two ships left on the board, I'm flying a K-Wing. If I go 3 and slam 3 and continue to pull this maneuver off, I am going to be able to stay out of his range for the next 6 minutes until the clock runs. Is that slow playing? If I'm slamming down my dial, doing my actions really quick, if I'm drawing out the game where I'm not actually engaging?
Well, so this now depends on if your opponent recognizes that they can't directly chase you, and then they do the hard turn to cut you off in 2 turns time. If you suddenly slow down so that they don't get that third turn, then you've used the clock to your advantage.
Yeah, but then that begs the question, is using the clock to your advantage fair?
According to FFG, no. But the interpretation of that by the player base is vastly different depending on the game state and situation.
I can tell you I've only ever had one instance in one tournament where I knew that if I didn't do something like that, I was most likely going to lose because I was flying a decimator. I was probably down to like 1 or 2 hull. And all I needed to do, if I just slowed down to try to take a shot, I may have won the game that way, but if I missed my shots, I knew I was going to lose. And in order for me to win the game, all I had to do was just dial in 3 straights and boost. That was it. He wasn't going to catch me in the allotted amount of time. And I felt dirty, but technically is that slow playing if I'm doing it fast? I'm getting my stuff down fast. So that's where like the the term slow play seems almost like I totally get the idea of like, I'm just going to hold my dowel for 60 seconds before I put it down. Totally understand that for dragging the clock out. But if in the convex of that, I can be putting my dowel down really fast. And if I'm talking to a judge, nope, I'm slamming my dowel down. Like, is I recognizing that I'm not engaging, that's also a form of slow play, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the problem, is that it is literally unsolvable. Because as Sean said, it's like we joked about this exact situation when we're talking about the upswans and how they used to be able to deploy fur forwards, and like it was impossible to do that amount, like counteract their alpha strike within the time limit constraints of the game was impossible if you played it correctly, because the first one that moves coordinates to a second one, which coordinates to a third one, which coordinates back to give the first one its focus.
Correct.
But
and they're in your deployment zone on turn one.
But at every point within that, I get to consider the action for my first one, which let's say like 20 seconds is okay for thinking about your action. So then I've got to measure range for my coordinate. Then I get another 20 seconds for my second ship's action. So I take them. Then I've got to measure my coordinate. Then I get 20 seconds for a third ship action. Then I measure a coordinate. Goes back to the first one, and I get 20 seconds to think about the action I actually wanted to take, which was focus. But instead of taking 20 seconds to take a focus, I just took 80 plus measuring time.
That is where
all of those are legitimate decision points.
They are. Right? Which is why quantifying it like that, it's just not, there's just no way. There's just no way you could sit down and quantify each individual action, each individual type to a specific time frame. That's why I happened to be genuinely in Sean's court. And I was in this when we were in the height of our olden days, when I was really into tournament play, that I felt that chess clocks would have been the right answer for this problem. If you're going to slow play out, at some point in time, you're going to have to come out of that corner. You're going to have to like throw that dial down quickly because you're going to be out of time. And it takes the objectivity of, okay, we're in turn four, we're already at minute 60 of a 75-minute game. You've clearly been slow playing, but I can't do anything about it now. Now I don't have to worry about that because you've burned so much time off your clock. You're going to be the one shifting your gameplay to be able to catch up so you don't lose on time.
So I'm going to kind of rein us back onto topic slightly, not to try and interject too much, Ed, sorry.
No,
so
that's
okay. Do you think the problem is, in that case, do swarm players take too long activating, or do ace players take too long, you know, with their decision points?
No, I go back to my original stance. I think it's player. It is player-based.
Yeah.
I think ultimately, if you're going to look at this objectively, it's both players' problem, both players' fault. But I think you can actually throw this back on the ace player if we're talking about the topic point. Because the swarm player seems to be know what he's doing and is doing things as quickly as possible. So he's moving six ships in 90 seconds, which was your example, compared to two ships in 60 seconds.
Yeah, that was one turn. I've got three turns worth of written down. One of them was 2 minutes to move six ships. The other one, the two ships took 90 seconds. Then another turn was the six ships took 90 seconds. The aces took 65.
Yeah, the problem there is, in my opinion, it's on the ace player. Just because if you're looking at it under the topic you're talking about, the ace player is the problem, because even though there's more decision points probably with an ace player should know what his decision points are prior to even thinking about moving his ships, because you've already made all those decisions while the swarm player is moving. With the exception if the swarm player does something that's just totally off the wall, you know, that would change that factoring. But as an ace player, you should already know what you're going to do.
I mean, the other end of the extreme that I wrote down was one of the I think this was turn two. So the ace player's seen where the opening's going. The swarm player's seen the rough directions or facings of the aces in turn two. So the swarm player took 2 minutes 30 to do his activation, and the ace player took 35 seconds. So that's the opposite end of the spectrum, where now the swarm player's done his opening gambit, gets to see where those ships have gone. But then it's like, okay, do I need to barrel roll around these rocks? How am I going to do? And again, we're talking about strikers with the double maneuvers. So a little bit of that comes in. I'm willing to forgive a little bit of that 2 minutes 30. But, you know, that's the opposite extremes of the anecdotal evidence that I have for you.
See, but we're only talking about activation here, right? That's really the
point. Yeah, this is which we're just activation movement phase.
Right. Because we're not
planning phase.
We're not factoring in planning. We're not factoring in, you know, all the combat, all the decisions for combat, things like that. We're just looking at basically maneuvering
it whenever they're bumping into it. Yeah.
I mean, and then when you get into things like that, that's the fly in the ointment in this, where if you bump, then you have to backtrack. And the rule for backtracking now is using the templates and all that type of stuff. It's an interesting thing that you're talking about here, because in my opinion, this is actually a great topic, because I don't think people are that aware of their own play style in games. Like there are a few players that are. I think Paul Heaver is really good at understanding the game in that phase of the game, because I have seen Paul take time. I have seen Paul do everything quickly. You know, it all depends on the list, but I've seen him play so much that, you know, Paul understands where he's going. And I think good players understand their list and understand the things that the list can do. Players that aren't familiar with their lists or maybe aren't as good of players will have difficulties. That's where that time extends out to 230 rather than the 90 or the 80 or 70 that they had been doing earlier on. I also think it goes back to, though, Chris, and you brought this up, you know, the ace player taking more time because he's making next turn decisions during his time.
Yeah.
And that is an absolute fact in playing an ace list versus a low initiative swarm. Low initiative swarms have to gather all of their intel after the turn is over, because they don't know what ships are going to be left on the board after the combat phase. They don't know how much damage they've done, you know, those types of things, where ace players have that great advantage because they're going to shoot first. They're going to know what's, you know, they're going to be in position first. In position last, but with all the information first, they're going to know who they're shooting at, what they're shooting at, how they're shooting at them, all the actions they're going to take. The difference with a swarm player is, do they spend the tokens or don't spend the tokens? Because they need them there for defense, potentially. And that's kind of the only decision-making in the combat round in a lot of ways that ace players have to make. Where swarm players would have to make all their decisions at the point when they pick up their dials or at the point when they're going to do their maneuvers, just because, you know, and I'm not as familiar. I know what the ailerons do and everything. I get that. But they really have to make that decision then, while the ace player doesn't.
Yeah. The only reason I chose that list was because it's kind of a full extreme of, I have to do everything. I've got a pre-dial maneuver, my actual maneuver, and my action, all of which have to be done for all six ships before the ace player does any of his stuff. So it's like the most extreme I could make the example, because that's actually more movement than an eight-ship list, because each ship moves twice and then has reposition.
So I do have a question. You guys were talking about using chess clocks and everything on, like, to determine, like, the speed of the game. How exactly would you get around setting of the dials? Because that is an actual thing where both players are doing the same thing at the same time, and chess clocks run where one clock runs, then the other clock runs, then one clock, and then the other.
You would bridge the clock during that turn.
Yeah, so they have like a pause. So the way I've seen it tonight, I can't remember what event FFG ran it at, but they did run a chess clock event. And I believe the way that it worked was that it's paused. The player who places their dials first starts their opponent's clock, and then their clock's running while they finish picking. But again, the thing with it is, you get stupid, and it's really, really difficult, because if I'm flying a two-ship list, I put both my dials down, put you on your time, you place yours, and then I say, oh, wait, I'm going to start my clock, and then I've actually had all of the time when your clock was running.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It's a little bit weird.
But that happens in chess all the time. If you're going to look at it with chess clocks, I remember a lot of times where player forgets to punch his button, and I just sit there and I just wait till they realize I'm playing on their time. You know, and I've done it. I've actually played in a game. I remember back in the early 90s where I played almost 25 minutes on their time and they thought I was wasting all of my time, and it put their clock down to like 7 minutes left and they were screwed because they mentally made that mistake. You know, yeah. That's part of the risk when you do something like that.
And that's it. I don't think chess clocks fixes the game. I think it papers over some problems and then creates a whole bunch of new ones. And I think that's the joy of X-Wing. We've had this conversation before, not necessarily about this exact topic, but like X-Wing's a really, really good game until you try and take it seriously.
Yeah.
Well, and that people are trying to eke out every little advantage in the game.
You have to assume that your opponent's playing in good faith and you have to play in good faith, and then X-Wing works fine.
I agree. That's a great point. You know, you have to take the game at face value.
Yeah. I think that's probably the best way to round it out. I don't know, unless anyone's got any other closing thoughts on that topic.
I want to close with your golden rule there, Chris. Just don't be a dick.
I think X-Wing's a really, really good game. There's lots of fun to be had playing it, but you have to assume, and if you just assume all the time that it's being played in good faith, yes, you will get screwed over. But it won't bother you because you don't care because you're just playing a game.
Yeah. It's the minute you take it seriously, it starts to become problematic.
Yeah.
And not that taking the game seriously is bad. I'm not suggesting that. It's just when you throw your hat into that arena, you need to recognize that there's a lot of good, good people out there. But there are some that are going to try to squeeze every advantage out of every phase of the game that they can to their advantage. That was a great topic. Thank you.
We'll do what we can, you know.
All right, so I am going to have to apologize for the brevity, but I do have a second server that I need to start upgrading. So, unfortunately, I'm going to have to call it quits here. So I'm going to say goodbye to everyone and thank everyone for joining us. We'll try to make the next one extra long for you guys, because we know how much you love hearing our voices. So I know, Chris, we've got some housekeeping to do. So, Chris, I'll let you take it away.
Okay, so we'll just blast through all of this. I wanted to do a shout-out for one of our patrons, Peter. He finished second in the Camino System Open. He managed to actually make it onto a streamed game, and he posted the game onto our Facebook group. So if you go to Lack of Focus Podcast, the group on Facebook, it's in there. But yeah, well done, Peter. Finishing second was a really good shout. That was the Ninja Turtles list from a while ago with four Kamara Goons and Omkar Plot.
Love that page up.
Yeah, but the game's actually on there. It's a relatively short game to watch without spoiling anything, but well worth a watch. Without being too insulting to the guys over at Firestorm, I disagreed with some of the commentary somewhat and gave Peter a lot more credit than they did. But we're really well done, mate. And a few of our patrons messaged to ask if we could give him a shout-out. So right, it was a group of friends who all listen. And I'm glad all of your Roger tokens arrived, because some of the ones through UK were delayed. The next batch of stuff will be going out probably next week. Like the Spy vs. Spy cards will be getting sent out soon. I'm still waiting for my friend to actually recut the Lack of Focus tokens. We've got the acrylic. I bought the acrylic and he was going to do them, but he does them on his spur time when he's not cutting something else for me to try and keep the cost down. So the next batch of swag will hopefully be able to preview soon. And that's it. Make sure you don't buy too much toilet roll.
Good luck in finding it. Between that and pasta, apparently the two hot button items, like finding stuff that's going to last for a while. But hey, all right. So I'm going to say goodbye to everyone. Chad, fantastic to talk to you again.
Yeah. Hopefully I can try and get on the show a little bit more often.
Yeah. Well, doing it over Discord actually makes it a little bit easier, hopefully.
Well, with my work schedule, that's the problem.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I told you we have a prong attack for Chad. Get a car, which we've taken care of. Get a better job. Take over the world. It's that simple.
I'm working on number two.
If Ed actually turns up for our Thursday recordings, Chad can turn up more.
Yeah. Well, he would physically have been, admittedly, he would have physically been here on purpose. I do fully accept the blame for this. I'm actually starting my upgrade now as we're speaking. But my boss, for whatever reason, has elected Thursdays to be like some of our upgrade dates. So I'm going to have to negotiate. because it's fine whenever it's all like the infrastructure side guys, but whenever it comes down to my stuff, I'm like, hey, can I have like a little bit of notice and not like today? Because legitimately, I walked into a meeting this morning like, oh yeah, by the way, we're going to be doing the Windows updates in the SQL Server, and you need to be there to make sure that the cluster doesn't fall down and the SQL Server's up and running. Like, well, great, cool. Not like I had plans tonight.
So yeah. Well, welcome to adulting, Ed.
Yeah, this adulting sucks. Just throw that out. A little bit of foreplanning. That's all I'm asking. A little bit of planning. Sean, always good to talk to you, my friend.
Yeah, it's great to hear everybody's voice. I know I missed the last one, but I had a death in the family, so I had to work with that. And hopefully we'll be available for a good amount of the shows in the future.
Yeah, I missed you telling me what I was doing wrong when I was flying. You should have seen it.
Nothing, you won.
Oh, I don't know about that. Chris, always good to talk to you, my friend.
Oh, it's always good to be here. I'm just glad we can keep doing this stuff.
Yeah, me too. All right, so that's going to do it for this one. Again, pretty short. I hope you did enjoy it. Catch us on the next episode. I'm not sure what we're going to be doing, but I'm going to see if I can try to weasel Chris into another game of Vassal. Spoiler alert, I don't know if it's going to come. If it's going to happen, but I'm going to try to get another game, and I'm trying to at least have a minimum of one game every episode to at least talk about. So until next time, guys, I hope you guys enjoyed this one. And as always, fly casual. Thank you once again for joining the Lack of Focus X-Wing podcast. Check out Dice Hate Productions for all of the latest episodes, and we'll be looking forward to seeing you again next episode.